Due to the nature of this case, listener discretion is advised. This episode includes discussions of child abuse, sex trafficking, gun violence, and murder. Consider this when deciding how and when you'll listen. I want to be upfront about today's case. Nada Franck doesn't survive this story. From the very beginning of her life, the cards were stacked against Nada. And as she got older, the roadblocks only kept piling up. But her adoptive parents wouldn't let her fall through the cracks. Together with their community, they pulled her up every time she stumbled. And bit by bit, Nada channeled their support into courage and resolve, until finally she was able to change the trajectory of her life. Although Nada doesn't survive, I'm so inspired. Not only by her, but by the people who continue to keep her memory alive. I'm Sarah Turney, and this is Disappearances, a Spotify Studios original. Every Thursday, I'll discuss a new missing person case ripped from history. I want to better understand the many reasons people disappear and the impact their absences can have on those left behind. Today, I'd like you to meet Nada Franck, a 24-year-old Indigenous woman who first ran away from home when she was 12. But in a cruel twist of fate, it was only when she stopped running that her life was cut short.
At IKEA, your dream home is a blue bag away. No matter the size of your space or budget, we've got everything you need to turn your dreams into reality. And now with new lower prices on hundreds of our most popular products, bringing the dream home is even easier. Like the gray Strandom wing chair, was $369, now $299. And the IKEA Plus 365 9-piece cookware set was $129.99, now $89.99. And hundreds more. Shop new lower prices at ikea-usa.com today.
Hear that? It's the sound of someone whacking the ground with a rake. Specifically, they're beating around the bush, which we've done enough of in this ad too, so let's get right to it. The new Moneymaker scratch-off from the Ohio Lottery doesn't beat around the bush. Moneymaker. Play the game and you could win money. Up to $2 million. With more than $88 million in prizes, ranging from $50 to $500, Moneymaker cuts right to the cash. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
Add a berry blast off for your day with the new Berry Pebbles. A berry twist on a classic breakfast. Perfect for giving those growing minds a blast of creativity. With the new Berry Way to Pebbles. Yabba dabba do you with Berry Pebbles. Head to postpebblescereal.com to learn more. Yabba dabba do and the Flintstones and all related characters and elements copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
You go in there with your heart open. That's how Monty Franck described his mindset before walking into a foster home and meeting his daughters for the first time. It's 2009. Monty and his wife Jen are looking to expand their family. They live in Isle, a rural lake town in Minnesota. Monty's worked as a tribal EMT for 25 years, and he's now the emergency management coordinator for the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe. Jen is a social worker. The day the Franks meet Nada and Lanicia for the first time, Nada is 9 years old. She's been in and out of foster care her whole life. Her sister Lanicia is just a toddler. They're dressed in tattered clothing and have been sleeping in a closet. They haven't been given many reasons to trust people. Jen and Monty adopt the two girls and become loving, patient parents. Lanicia takes a liking to Jen and Monty, but Nada is slower to bond. She struggles with impulse control and processing her emotions. Monty learns that Nada's biological mom drank during her first pregnancy, before she realized she was expecting. She stopped when she found out, but Nada was still born with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder, which can sometimes cause learning and behavioral issues. Doctors also diagnosed Nada with something called reactive attachment disorder. It basically means she can't form healthy emotional connections with Monty and Jen. The disorder is usually a result of early childhood neglect, which makes sense given Nada's history. The combination of all these factors leaves Nada feeling frustrated and angry. She starts acting out for attention. Eventually, her behavior becomes dangerous. She threatens self-harm, and it seems like on one occasion, attempts suicide. By age 11, Nada threatens her sister and parents with knives and scissors. Monty calls 911 for help, and his co-workers show up. His fellow EMTs strap Nada to a gurney in their front yard and restrain her so she can't hurt herself. As Nada's behavior escalates, Monty and Jen make some difficult decisions. They decide they're not fully equipped to give their daughter the help she needs. So they place her in an out-of-home care facility designed to help children struggling with behavioral or developmental issues. But it doesn't work out. The place fails to meet her needs. According to Monty, there's no facility nearby that caters to children with fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. Most are teenagers with a chemical dependency or other more intense forms of care. But Nada just needs structure and guidance. After the first place doesn't work out, Nada tries another one. And another. None of them seem to be a match. Nada gets so frustrated that eventually she starts running away from their care. She travels to the Minneapolis area to stay with biological family. And this becomes a pattern. At first, Nada leaves for a few days at a time, but the older she gets, the more time she spends away. Monty believes it's related to her struggle with impulse. Anytime she gets overwhelmed, she bolts. Every time she goes missing, Monty sends Nada's photo around to all the first responders he knows. He also reaches out to the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, or NCMEC. They help distribute missing person flyers each and every time Nada disappears. But while Monty has this amazing network to help keep track of his daughter, they can only do so much. In 2013, when Nada's 14 years old, she runs away from yet another care facility. Immediately, the alarm bells are sounded. Her caretakers jump into action. Monty contacts his network. NCMEC blasts out a flyer. At 4:20 p.m. that day, Nada's social worker gets a call from the North Star Transit Authority in Minneapolis. Someone saw Nada getting off a train, and now they have her detained. But for some reason, the social worker does the unthinkable. She tells the transit authority to let Nada go. It's completely against protocol. As Nada's case manager, she's obligated to call the police so they can get Nada somewhere safe until Monday. According to Monty, the North Star train authorities try to push back, but Nada's social worker argues with them until 4:30 hits, the time she's no longer on the clock. And then she basically hangs up. So even though the sun is about to set, North Star follows the social worker's original instructions. They let Nada leave.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It's February 2013, winter in Minnesota. No one has seen or heard from Nada Franck in 6 months. Her father, Monty, watches the nightly news. The frozen body of a teenage girl has been found in the trunk of a car in Columbia Heights. The anchor describes the victim, and Monty's heart sinks. It sounds just like Nada. Monty knows a retired sergeant in Columbia Heights. So he calls the guy up and basically says, "Listen, my daughter's missing. Let me know if you think it might be her, and I'll come down to ID the body." He sends a photo of Nada, then waits by the phone, preparing for the worst. The wait feels unimaginably long. Monty hasn't stopped looking for Nada since she disappeared. Even with his extensive network, it seems like she might really be gone this time. Monty suspects Nada's caseworker treated his daughter's case with disregard because, in his words, they're just a Native family. A few weeks after Nada disappeared, he contacted the executive director of the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition, a woman named Nicole Matthews. He knew that as a 14-year-old runaway, Nada was at high risk for homelessness and sexual victimization. Nicole put out a call, which is how Monty connected with Patty Wetterling, another Minnesota parent with a missing child. Patty's 11-year-old son, Jacob, was abducted 24 years earlier. His disappearance inspired Patty to create the Jacob Wetterling Resource Center, a nonprofit organization focused on child safety. Monty and Patty became fast friends. She's been really supportive, always checking in on the Franks to see how they're holding up. These past 6 months of not knowing would have been even more isolating without her. All the Franks have wanted is to find Nada. Now they're worried the police just did. When the retired sergeant finally calls back, Monty braces himself for the worst. He's given several death notices over the years, but he's yet to be on the receiving end. The call doesn't change that. The sergeant has bittersweet news. It wasn't Nada. It was someone else's child in that trunk. Monty's daughter could still be alive. In the summer of 2013, authorities received their first lead in months. They find pictures of Nada circulating online, on adult websites. They believe she's being sex trafficked. Monty's horrified, especially because they aren't able to track down Nada's location. The ads continue for about a year and a half. Then, just after Nada's 16th birthday, they abruptly stop. There's no trace of her anywhere. Around this time, Monty reaches out to Patty Wetterling for support, and Patty doesn't sugarcoat what's happening. The cold truth is, most victims of human trafficking are never found. But Monty waits, he doesn't hold a funeral, and 6 months after the ads stop, he gets a call from the St. Paul Police Department. It's Nada. Authorities think she's alive. A cashier at a flower shop in St. Paul may have seen her earlier that day. A woman came in, and he couldn't shake the feeling that he'd seen her before. Turns out, the shop had Nada's missing person poster hung in their store. When he put two and two together, he called 911. I don't know how, but by the time authorities call Monty, they've tracked her down. They have an address where they think she's staying. When officers arrive, a woman opens the door. Police flash Nada's picture, and her demeanor changes. She recognizes Nada. It's enough to assume Nada's somewhere inside. They draw their weapons and perform a felony search of the home. They sweep the main floor, then upstairs. A few officers move to the basement. At first, it looks empty. But then, one notices a pair of sneakers sticking out from behind a couch. He motions to a fellow officer. They flip the couch over. And there, on the floor, is Nada Franck. Back at the station, police question Nada, but she stays tight-lipped, which isn't unusual for victims of human trafficking. Nada might be physically safe, but the trauma she's experienced isn't going away anytime soon. It could take lifetimes to unpack. Monty and Jen know how hard her recovery will be. Their daughter has changed. She isn't self-harming or threatening her little sister. She keeps quiet and keeps to herself. Monty and Jen don't push her to talk. They hold space for her, hoping that over time, she'll feel safe enough to open up. Looking for a fresh start, they send her to a new school called Bemidji High. It's for older teens who need a little extra guidance figuring out what comes next. There's an officer stationed there named Randy Moyer, who's a godsend. I'm not sure what kind of training he has, but from everything our team has seen and read while researching this case, he's really good at working with these students. They knock on his door and confide in him, things they don't tell anyone else. One day, 6 months after enrolling at this new school, Nada pays Randy a visit. From the second she starts talking, Officer Moyer knows she deserves more resources than he alone can provide. He asks if she'd be comfortable doing a forensic interview with someone specifically trained in speaking to juvenile survivors of sex crimes. Amazingly, she says yes. Bemidji High partners with Hope House, a facility that specializes in working with victims of sexual assault. The place is warm and inviting, nothing like the sterile interrogation room she spent so much of her childhood in. And when Nada arrives, she opens up and shares her story. The first half of the interview takes 4 hours. The second half takes another 8. Afterward, Monty asks to see a copy of the report. In an interview with The Guardian, his voice cracked as he said, quote, It was the most graphically degrading thing you could ever read as a parent. He learned Nada shared a pimp with her birth mother, and the pimp would sell them together as a double act. Eventually, her case is referred to St. Paul PD, but despite everything, it seems like officials never follow up. SPPD has no record of an investigation. The Guardian actually checked with multiple police departments and county attorney's office in the Twin City area. They said, quote, "None were aware of any investigation into the sex crimes Nada described." Now, I have no idea how this happened, but it's clear that, once again, the systems that are theoretically in place to ensure Nada's safety have not only failed her, but paved the way for other people to fall prey to patterns of abuse. Why should she trust that anything will change? In 2016, a few months after Nada's interview at Hope House, she runs away again. It takes weeks, but eventually authorities find her. And by the time they do, Monty and Jen decide to separate. But the Franks are still a family. They're in it together. And eventually, Nada stops running. In 2017, at age 18, Nada decides to get her own place in the Twin Cities where she grew up. Monty helps her find an apartment and move in. He recognizes that his daughter needs independence. Nada thrives. She gets a job and meets a young man named Shan Bei Vang, who goes by Bei. The two of them click, and before long, they move in together. According to Monty, Bei loves things about Nada that always made her feel insecure, like her crooked smile and fiery personality. She learns to trust him, which to Monty is a huge milestone. And more than anything, he's just glad that Bei makes Nada feel safe. Nada makes strides in other parts of her life too. In 2018, she enrolls in a GED program at Anoka Hennepin Technical College. And at 20 years old, she completes the course. Nada's proud of the accomplishment, but tells Jen and Monty that she doesn't want them to attend her graduation ceremony. Monty says it's her reactive attachment disorder talking. She needs to do everything on her own. But being the kind of father he is, Monty thinks fat chance that's gonna happen. He shows up at the college on the night of her graduation. He's hoping it'll be in a dark auditorium so he can hide out in the back. But it's much more intimate. The ceremony happens in a small, well-lit classroom. So Monty ends up standing in the hallway, peeking in through a door window. He wells up with pride as Nada's name gets called, and she's handed her high school diploma. Monty scurries away after and goes downstairs to find the school principal. He bought Nada a small present and asks if they could deliver it for him. Later that night, Monty gets a call from his daughter. Nada tells him if she knew he was outside, she would have wanted him to come in. She would have wanted to see him. After graduation, Nada lands a job in sales at an eyeglass company. 40 hours a week, full benefits and everything. But Nada says her real dream is to work someplace where she can help other survivors of human trafficking. For maybe the first time in her life, she's planning for the future and sees herself as a success. January 16th, 2019 is Nada's 21st birthday. To celebrate, she takes Monty to a Brazilian steakhouse, her treat. She worked a few weeks of overtime so she could afford to pay for him. At dinner, Nada says there's something she's been meaning to tell her father, and the words she shares have stuck with Monty ever since. She says, "Dad, when I look back at my life, the only reason I'm alive is because of you." Nada Franck spends the first few months of 2019 carving out a path for herself. Work is going well. She has focus, drive. By late winter or early spring, Bei asks Nada to marry him. Between the engagement, her job, and her plans for the future, Nada's on a high. But while Bei and Nada love one another, according to Monty, their relationship is rocky. At times, Nada drinks too much. She gets angry and flies off the handle. Monty remembers sitting Bei down and explaining to him that Nada will always struggle with maintaining relationships. There's no magic pill that can fix that. Loving her means loving all of her. Bei and Nada date for 5 years, but eventually the relationship gets to be too much. They break up. According to Monty, the split is mutual. In 2021, Monty helps Nana move out of the apartment she and Bay shared together, and there doesn't seem to be any bad blood. Monty thanks Bay for loving his daughter. He sees the good that's come from it, the growth they brought out in one another. At the time, Nada's 24 years old. She adjusts to her new life without Bay and starts dating a 23-year-old named Cordell Alexander Page Jr. Cordell's family describes him as a hardworking, sensitive kid, someone who always wanted to start a family. But in time, it becomes clear there's more going on underneath the surface. Cordell's pastor will later say, quote, "Goodness was following Cordell, but it wasn't the only thing following him." Just before dawn, on May 26, 2021, police are called to the Golden Gates apartment complex in Brooklyn Park, Minnesota. Neighbors heard gunshots, but no one knows where they came from. Police go door to door, evacuating the building. When they reach apartment 103, nobody answers, and the door won't open. It's been barricaded with furniture. Officers slide a snake camera underneath the frame. Inside, they see the bodies of a man and a woman on the ground. A SWAT team breaks down the door, pushes their way into the room, and find it's Nada and Cordell. Judging by the scene, Cordell shot Nada with an assault rifle, then turned the weapon on himself. Back in Isle, Monty's working late because of a house fire in the area. Jen has tried calling him a few times throughout the day, but he's been too busy to answer. It isn't until he leaves work that he sees a text from his daughter, Lenicia. It says, "Dad, you have to call home. It's an emergency." When Jen picks up the phone, all Monty can hear is sobbing. He spent 10 years outrunning this call. So without any words exchanged, he asks, "Is our daughter dead?" Knowing the answer. Monty, Jen, and Lenicia give Nada a traditional 4-day Ojibwe funeral. It's an extensive process. In their belief system, dead souls go to the place of eternal happiness. But for as long as the souls feel their family's grief, they'll try to return to the world of the living. The rituals involved are meant to be healing, so both the living and the departed can move on. Monty lights a spirit fire in their yard, which the Franks keep burning for the next 4 days. He and Jen boil cedar wood and use the water to wash Nada's body. Lenicia sits with Nada's body overnight between the wake and funeral. In the morning, the coroner takes Nada's body to the local community center, and the Franks prepare for her service. Earlier that week, Monty put out a call for 6 Native men to help carry Nada's casket. He hopes enough people will show up. When the day comes, Monty leads his family down a hallway in the community center. He opens up the door to the auditorium and stops. The room is overflowing. A sea of first responders in dress blue uniforms stand to greet them. Monty says it takes his breath away. A few days after Nada's funeral, Monty visits her apartment to pack up her things. It's important to him, he says, for his own personal sense of closure. I can't help but think back to the mindset he had right before he met Nada for the first time. You go in there with your heart open. He kneels in his daughter's apartment, gently folding the blood-soaked clothes on the floor, the walls and ceiling covered in bullet holes. He packs up Nada's belongings, then Cordell's too. He leaves and calls Cordell's mother. He understands. She's also a parent who just lost their child. He tells her, "I just want you to know, we've got all of Cordell's things packed up. When you're ready, you're allowed to go in there and get those." It's the only time they've ever spoken. Monty says he holds no animosity towards Cordell's family. He doesn't need answers from them. There's no one left to be prosecuted. As he says, it's done. Sometime after Nada's funeral, advocates for the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women organization ask Monty to tell Nada's story. Supportive male role models are crucial to their movement. they say it's usually the mothers, aunties, sisters, and grandmothers who are left to carry on the legacy of missing Indigenous women and fight on for change. It's rarely, if ever, the men. And yet, so often, men are the perpetrators of the violence, the reason Indigenous women disappear or are murdered. Ultimately, it's a male problem to solve. Monty listens to their words and takes them to heart. He's worked to raise awareness for missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls ever since. He's currently involved with the Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives Office, which helps support and guide families who've had a loved one disappear. It's the first office of its kind in the U.S. Monty is grateful for the time he had with his daughter. He's grateful that she lived long enough to share her story on her own terms. That after everything they'd been through, they were able to understand and love each other, to talk about the hard stuff. Sharing Nada's story helps Monty remember his daughter. He says, "My journey now as a father is to take her passion, her resiliency, and not make her death a statistic or a check in the box. That's how I see my role as her father. To honor her." Thank you for listening. In the time it took you to finish this episode, 30 people disappeared in the United States alone. For more information on cases like Nada Franck's and what you can do to help, please visit Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women USA at mmiwusa.org. Again, that's mmiwusa.org. They're a nonprofit organization whose mission is to bring the missing home, help families of the murdered cope, and support them through the process of grief. If you or someone you know needs assistance with a missing persons case, please visit seasonofjustice.org. Season of Justice is a nonprofit organization that provides funding to law enforcement agencies and families to help solve cold cases. For full disclosure, I am a member of the board. It's a great resource for both law enforcement and families in order to bring closure to those impacted by unsolved violent crime. You can find all episodes of Disappearances and all other Spotify Studios originals for free on Spotify. Disappearances is a Spotify Studios original. Our head of programming is Julian Boireau. Our supervising sound designer is Russell Nash, with Nick Johnson as our head of production and Spencer Howard as our post-production supervisor. Allie Wicker is our supervising editor, and Derek Jennings is our writing lead. This episode of Disappearances was written by Aaron Lan, edited by Natalie Pertzofsky and Connor Sampson, fact-checked by Haley Milliken, research by Brian Petrus, produced by Aaron Larson, with sound design by Alex Button. I'm your host, Sarah Turney. To hear more stories hosted by me, check out my other podcast, Voices for Justice.